Bye.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid
to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody. See Live Off the Record with Shivago Lang is sponsored by Doctors Hospital, Royal Fidelity Bank and Trust, Royal Star Assurance, Fidelity Bank Bahamas, the Water and Sewage Corporation, the Digital and the Insurance Commission of the Bahamas.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon, where we are spending yet another show with professionals from Doctors Hospital, our title sponsor and key partner in this week of health talks. We're going to be looking at the issue of medicines and pharmacology in the first hour with my very special guest, Dr. Ivis Turner. And then in the second hour, we'll be looking at matters related to nutrition. So glad that you could join us today. If you want to give us a call at all, the numbers to do so are 323-6232. That's 323-6232. Or 325-4316, 325-4316, 325-4259, 325-4259. You can also text us at 422-4796. That's 422-4796. So you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We are, of course, live on Cable Bahamas, Channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow Channel 612. Dr. Turner, welcome to Z Live today. Thank you so much for being a part of this very special time of educating and guiding our audience on matters related to medicine and pharmacology.
Thank you, Mr. Lang, for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. It's our pleasure and our privilege to have you here. Now, you know, and I know, that the experience of the Bahamian public with medicine is very diverse and very interesting because so often, you know, a part of our treatment, whether it's for those chronic illnesses or those communicable diseases, a part of the treatment involves medicine. So let me ask you first up, what exists in a space where improper use of medication is common, whether it's not taking the medication on time or using someone else's prescription and so on, what do people need to know and what can we do to combat this? Because I don't think people take it seriously that doing that kind of thing matters. Some people at least.
Yes, definitely, Mr. Lang. So this is a major concern in healthcare today. A lot of individuals who we see come through the emergency room and who tend to be admitted in the hospital are admitted due to some level of non-adherence with their existing medication regimens. So this is not something that's unusual. And this is, we have a continuous effort from healthcare level to encourage our patients and all individuals to, you know, take their medications properly, to be consistent with medication use and avoid using anything that's not prescribed or not under the guidance of a healthcare practitioner. So there are quite a few types of challenges that we see persons may experience. So just to name a few of them and to give a little bit of insight. So oftentimes we see that there are education gaps. So we may find that we have patients who are not fully informed about their medication. So a lot of patients we'd see would come in and they would have had their interaction with their physician or what have you, and they would have gotten that initial information on what the medication is for. But we'd find that, you know, we hear all of this instruction from our healthcare provider, and as soon as we walk out of the door, it's so much that we would have had to consume that you forget a lot of it. So we would have patients who come in who have no idea what they're taking the medication for. They don't know what the medication is called, can't, you know, even pronounce it, or don't know the dose or how long they're to be on it, or what to even expect from the medication in terms of the optimal outcomes or even side effects. So we find that, of course, like I mentioned, we have a huge education gap in providing pharmaceutical information. Additionally, we would find that a lot of patients have challenges with commitment. So here in the Bahamas, we would see that when it comes to acute medication therapy, so this is where you may have an accident or something that causes some level of pain, for instance, or a short-term infection, we would have no challenges with that because, of course, the patient is going to follow that short-term instruction. But then when we look into our non-communicable diseases, so we're looking at diabetes management and hypertension management, which are very highly evident in the Bahamas, you know, very common diseases in the Bahamas. We have a lot of patients who are non-adherent with their medication for those therapies. So commitment level has to be encouraged amongst patients. And then we have the economic challenges. So we find that a lot of medications that are required for therapy can really dig a hole in people's pockets. And oftentimes, what we consider the best method of treatment or the best pharmaceutical options to recommend to patients may be too costly. So a patient may go not expecting to hear from their pharmacist that their medication is over X amount of dollars. And then they decide at that point, okay, I can only afford 1 week's supply. And then we don't see them for weeks at hand. And then they come back when they're not feeling good again to get another week's supply. So there are a lot of challenges that we face. Now, how do we combat these challenges, or how do we decrease or close the gaps with all of these challenges? I think really and truly to close these gaps, we have to develop closer relationships with our patients. So healthcare and you know, the desire to achieve optimal outcomes, it requires a combination of effort. So we have to have effort from the patient, of course. We have to have the effort from the pharmacist. We have to have the effort from the physician and the nurse and whoever else is involved in helping that patient to arrive at the best outcome. So what we want to do is make sure that there is continued trust, there's continued communication, and that we have we're all on a mission to get the best for the patient. So we have to have an outline of what we're moving towards. So it's really developing that real relationship between all of the involved parties, all of the stakeholders, so that we can make sure that we're on the same target, and wherever we may find any chokeholds or any challenges, we can work together to fix it. So for instance, if a medication is too expensive, let's look for an alternative. We can find generic alternatives for medications, for most medications that is, or we can even look for alternative therapy within the same class that may have been existing longer, so the price may be a lot more manageable for the patient. Doctors Hospital Pharmacy is looking to launch a medication therapy management program. So with this program, we hope to really develop even closer relationships with our patients at the retail and ambulatory care level, and even at the inpatient level, because this is where it starts for most patients. So with medication therapy management, what we would be able to do is set appointments with our patients. So if our patients desire to get more education on their conditions or even their medications, we can have a sit down for however long we find the need to be based on the number of medications the patient is on. And we can explore the entire dynamics of the therapy and what we expect to see come from it. So I think this would be really helpful. So this is one of the major steps that we're looking to take to help our patients, achieve the best health outcomes.
I have so many questions based on all that you have mentioned. In my own experience, my faithfulness to my medicine regime came because the doctor was very helpful in explaining to me why and how the medicine worked, right? And they kind of helped me appreciate what the illness was, what the situation I was confronted with was, and that this is the reason why the medication is necessary. This is what the medication does. And on occasions, they said to me, listen, on one occasion, I had pulmonary tuberculosis. And the doctors told me, they said, listen, this regime has to be taken faithfully for a year. If you break, chances are you can get reinfected. And the next course of antibiotics may not be as helpful. And that put something in my head that said, I don't want to play around and mess around with that. So I found some doctors tend to be more informative and others less informative. How much is patient education important in maintaining a medicine regimen?
Patient education is definitely of utmost importance. Like you said, you had a physician who took the time to explain to you the importance of continuing that antimicrobial therapy. I know that medication usually consists of four. You may have been on four medications at one time, three
yes.
to four medications at one time.
Yes.
So, even that can sometimes seem burdensome, but if you understand, what the outcomes can be, or even what the detrimental effects can be if you just miss even one dose of that medication or one day of that medication, then you're almost forced into compliance, because now you're looking at the avenue of fear of what can happen if you don't. So we have patients who, like I said, if you don't understand what the indication, why you're taking it, and if you don't have the good outcomes you're expecting to receive from it, and then also the potential negative effects of not taking it as it's prescribed, then you don't understand the seriousness of what you're dealing with. So for instance, let's say you're on a blood pressure medication. We have a lot of patients who are on, for instance, Mycardis, right? For hypertension management. If you don't consistently take your hypertension management and your blood pressure is continuously elevated, or even if you take one tablet every couple of days, or if you feel bad or whatnot, or if you take your pressure and your pressure is elevated, but your pressure is now going through a process where it's continuously fluctuating. So a few days you can be high, a few days you can be normal after taking the medication, working your heart very hard. So now you're working yourself into a transition into cardiac conditions, the risk of cardiac conditions, which is even more serious and more difficult to manage with medication, and even in some cases more expensive. So all of these things have to be impressed upon our patients. So education is the key. And as with anything else, education is the key to improve compliance, to improve adherence.
And sometimes you have to do that education yourself, because, one of the things I do with medication, I go online myself and I search up whatever I can search up on it to find out how does it work? What are the side effects? what happens if X, Y, and Z happens and so forth, because I just want to know. I want to know what I'm putting in my body myself, besides what the doctor told me, and how this is supposed to help, how I'm supposed to feel, how I'm supposed to react, and so forth.
Right, exactly. A lot of times we say Google is our friend, but of course, even with Google, we have to be cautious with what right. we receive.
Right.
So, you know, still have to remember that our healthcare providers are the best resource. That would even take me into saying confidently that, you know, the pharmacy as your healthcare provider and the pharmacist, that's your most, in most cases, that's your most accessible healthcare resource.
Yes.
So if you create that relationship with your pharmacy and with your pharmacist, you know, you call them up, they can easily know or give you guidance on whether you should take a certain medication or how you should take it or whatnot, because they're already aware of your regimen based on your relationship being developed right. with that particular pharmacy.
We have a call on the line. We want to take that. You're getting early calls. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Lang.
Yes,
good afternoon to your guests. You know, I could appreciate the pharmacologist on the radio, because when I do, I have a long conversation with my own when I go to get my things, right, Lang? And she, right. we have a long conversation. She's always teaching me. And so what I'm afraid of, just some quick questions here before I hang up. But my father, Motrin, right? And, you know, at the time of the side effects of Motrin. And so what I did was, when I did my research, I found out that, well, I know it's called a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. And so he's wearing a defibrillator, but he had a heart problem, but he was bouncing back because we had him on a vegetarian diet. He wore them. I wouldn't say which one, because I'm still vexed with the doctor. So the doctor prescribed Motrin. And I left him that night, and he said, well, he didn't take any yet. So he took, I think it was 800, right? So what happens is, now, come to find out, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug Motrin shouldn't be given to heart patients. As in the States, it is a warning, should be put on the label. So even before the pharmacist dispense it, they ask the patients that. So I was trying to find out, how could that mistake be? Do the doctors work in conjunction with you all? Because it is apparent that he was apparently ignorant. I don't know if my father was a patient at the hospital, spent weeks in the hospital, spent a lot of money at that hospital, so he should have known, because they have computerized records, et cetera, et cetera. So the fact that he gave my father Motrin, and so Motrin causes an imbalance in homeostasis of intra and extracellular fluid. So I gave that credence as the reason why he had the heart attack, or it facilitated a heart problem. But then they denied it because they're saying you're ignorant. But what I'm saying is, in the States, it would have never been passed over the counter without the pharmacist asking the patient if they had a heart problem. And they say the lawsuit was warranted. But of course, you see, what I want to know from you, do you all keep data on post-medication consumption, like when someone take medicine? Do
you have any you gotta wrap it up for me, please.
Yeah, that's what I want to know. Do you all have data on vaccine efficacy and side effects here in the Bahamas? Because in the States, apparently, they are prescribing. I've known people who are being given drugs for attention deficit disorder and other psychedelic drugs for the simple problems that are from as early as 4 years old. So I just like to hang up and listen, because it was frightening to me, the level of ignorance displayed by the doctor. And no one in the doctor field is willing to contest these follies made by them. I've known people had strokes being given the wrong prescription, et cetera. That's what I'm saying. So you need a database.
Okay, thanks, man. We appreciate it. Appreciate you calling, Dr. Turner.
Hi. So thank you for your question. And I, you know, I, you know, from a healthcare perspective, I do apologize that happened. There are a number of things that could have led to that that issue. So for instance, I'm not sure if you would have taken, or if your father would have taken the prescription to the same pharmacy where he would have gotten all of his routine heart medications, or even if it was taken to the hospital where he would have had conditions and so forth. I cannot answer that question. I didn't get a chance to ask you that. However, this is one of the challenges that we face, especially in the retail and outpatient pharmacy area. Now, because we don't have a universal system in healthcare, well, in, you know, for all private and public healthcare, where we're able to easily access all information, all medical history, all medication history for all patients, you know, oftentimes if we're not getting complete information at that encounter on their healthcare history, on their health history and medical history, we may not have that information readily available to give you that advice based on the history. Additionally, if you would have went to a new pharmacy, for instance, that, you know, outside of where you would routinely go, oftentimes that check would not be done for, especially an acute medication. But pharmacists, from knowledge and from my experience with pharmacists here, the questions are usually asked, or at least within the counseling, because counseling is provided. So for all, especially new medications, at that encounter where the counseling is provided on the medications, there's an opportunity for questions. So especially a doctor's hospital at the retail end, I always encourage all of the pharmacists and technicians at that encounter of dispensing the medication, you ask the patient if this medication is new to them. And if it's not new to them, you ask them if they have any questions or concerns about the medication. If it is new to them, then you just go ahead and give counseling and education on the medication.
But
now, additionally, we also have printed monographs that should be given to patients to allow them time to read. And then we always encourage patients to call back if you have any questions. So there's a lot that could have been done. And then even in the retail area, often it's challenging with getting in contact with other healthcare providers because, you know, it's a continuous revolving door. There's always a patient that needs to be seen. And, you know, our healthcare providers are always moving. So we have that challenge that we face. But like I said, at that encounter with your most accessible healthcare provider, the pharmacist, you have the opportunity to ask questions. And I encourage everyone, if you're on any long-term medication or even short-term medication, vitamins, anything, it's important to inform the pharmacist when you're about to begin a new medication. Right. And it's also important to inform your physician during your visit. I always encourage patients, take your medications with you. When you come to the hospital, if you're coming to the emergency room or even for a visit with our specialist clinic, bring your medications with you. We have the practice of reconciling medications, which means that we would update everyone's profile with every listing of all of their medications and their medical history, which is very helpful to us.
But in my experience of going to a pharmacist to write a prescription, I've hardly seen a pharmacist who would turn around and say, well, you shouldn't be taking that unless it becomes some obvious something. Because generally they accept the competence of the physician in writing the prescription, eh?
I can't fully agree with that.
Okay. I was saying in my experience, I that's been my experience. I would present the prescription and they take the prescription.
Right, they take it, and I can speak for our practice here, any alarming side effects, you know, because we don't want to scare the patient. Of course, we would counsel you on what to expect, but if we know that there, you know, we have a lot of potential side effects or adverse effects, but their potential for occurring varies. So if you have one that you see 1 out of 100 patients may experience, most definitely you're going to speak to that patient about it. But if you have a potential side effects, which can be hundreds of potential side effects that occur in 1 out of 3 million patients based on studies, then you may not find it necessary based on that patient's profile to really delve deeply into that discussion about that.
Right, but
this is where the medication therapy management would come in, because now you would have that one-on-one sit down where you would thoroughly do a complete check on everything and you provide that education for your patient.
But I'm thinking, though, if with his father, for example, the caller who called, with his father, if a pharmacist, unless a pharmacist has data on his health condition and history, if a doctor prescribes a prescription for that person, it should be expect that a pharmacist has data that says, well, why is the doctor giving this patient Motrin when they have hard issues?
In the institutional setting, yes.
Okay, okay.
Which means that the information is readily available.
Okay.
So if you have a physician who's within that institution and they enter this information in the same system that you have access to,
okay.
Yes, that question will arise.
That makes
and
sense.
Even in a retail setting, if you have a patient who has the relationship with that pharmacy, who's been getting their medication with that pharmacy, be able to do a complete review at the time they receive that prescription and give advice based on that complete review because they're familiar with that patient, or they're familiar with that patient's regimen.
Okay.
But, you know, there's so many pharmacies and we have often seen that, you know, patients may go to one pharmacy and then go to another. And if they don't have, and at that time when the counseling is provided, the questions aren't asked by both parties, then there's potential it could be missed.
Okay.
Now, at the encounter with the physician, I know that one portion of the visit is usually to review what the patient is on. So in this instance, the physician would have been able to gather information based on what the patient's medical history would have been and what medications they're on and make a recommendation for acute treatment based on that.
Right. Now, how important is family to supporting medication regimen compliance? Because, you know, in some instances, you might be dealing with elderly people, children, or people who might have some disabilities and the like, or just generally people. How important are family members to trying to encourage and ensure people are doing what they are supposed to do with their medication?
A support system cannot be beat. So the regimen, the healthcare regimen would take into account not only the medication, but the lifestyle changes. So with these conditions, like let's say, I know we've been focusing on diabetes and hypertension. There's a complete change in lifestyle that's usually recommended for patients who may have had a lifestyle that's not really acceptable for that condition. For instance, what's called a DASH diet, where you decrease your salt intake and so forth, you would have to have a support system that is prepared to be in adherence with you. Because if you're trying to improve your outcomes and you want to decrease your salt intake, but all you have available every day, you're smelling the nice seasoned meat and the carbs and so forth, it creates a real challenge because it's difficult to be disciplined in an environment where you have temptation every day, unless you've created that habit long ago. But if you're newly diagnosed and you're in an environment where you don't have that support, it's very hard to get the best outcome. Because if you see the macaroni in the oven, you want to get a piece of that, you know?
So in a very real sense, our issues really pull in the people in our households and people close to us because you're right. I mean, I've seen it. It's very difficult to comply with something, to stick with something if every day you smell that juicy this and juicy that and you're thinking, man, I'm missing out too much and you just break.
Right. Exactly. And when it comes to like our elderly patients and even persons who aren't elderly, like, you know, for instance, if you have people who have a strenuous schedule, work schedule, oftentimes even they need assistance with staying on target with their medications and checking everything. So even little reminders from your support system can be very helpful. So, you know, in my household, I'd hear sometimes coming from my sister asking to other family members, you check your pressure, you check your blood sugar. So it's good to have people who are encouraging you to do better.
And I find that it's so important to have people checking because sometimes we are sure about taking our medication because the routine, we've gotten into a routine, but sometimes we're off. And if somebody is checking, they can check that for us.
Exactly.
We're going to take a break right now, and then when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion with Dr. Ivis Turner on medicine and pharmacology. So, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back after this break. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
We believe in relationship banking. We take pride in getting to know our clients. You have access to knowledgeable, approachable ambassadors and financial coaches so that we can recommend the best product for you. At Fidelity, we care about you. From your financial health to your physical health, we can relate to you because we're just like you. Come and start your relationship banking experience with us today. Visit us online at fidelitygroup.com. Visit any of our branches in Nassau or Grand Bahama, or phone 356-7764 in Nassau, or 352-6676 for Freeport.
Doctors Hospital's Pharmacy introduces a new spin on prescriptions called Pick Up Now, Pay Later. That's right, you can collect your medications first and pay after. How does it work? Step one, submit a prescription online. Step two, select a pickup site. Step three, collect your medication. And step four, pay online within 14 days. For more info, call us at 242-302-4785 or visit us at doctorshosp.com.
Happy anniversary, My Gateway. Did you know that you can request and pay for over 35 government services on mygateway.gov.bs? Sign up today and access government services online with efficiency and simplicity. It's a celebration of a year of collective success on our digital transformation journey. My Gateway, making government work for you.
Babe, you mashed the car?
I ain't mashed the car. The lady who run into me mashed the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today, or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
The Water and Sewage Corporation advises its customers in New Providence and the Family Islands that the corporation will commence mass disconnections beginning Monday, March 28, 2022, on all outstanding accounts and financial agreements. Customers who have not honored their financial agreements are advised to visit their local offices to update those agreements as soon as possible. And all customers are further advised to bring their accounts up to date to avoid the disconnection of their water and sewage services without further notice.
Doctors Hospital's Pharmacy introduces a new spin on prescriptions called Pick Up Now, Pay Later. That's right. You can collect your medications first and pay after. How does it work? Step one, submit a prescription online. Step two, select a pickup site. Step three, collect your medication. And step four, pay online within 14 days. For more info, call us at 242-302-4785 or visit us at doctorshosp.com.
If you're looking to diversify your portfolio, chart a course for RF Mutual Funds, where you can get global returns through our suite of internationally invested funds. Get exposure in U.S., Asian, European and emerging markets without central bank approval. And with financial services leader Morgan Stanley as the advisor of our international funds, you can benefit from RF's global connections. Set sail for international markets today by visiting rfgroup.com. RF, money at work.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid. Take a stand, everybody, come take my hand, we'll walk this road together, through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone, holler if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad you could join us here today as we partner with Doctors Hospital in providing you this week with some health information that hopefully will help you move along in the healthiest of fashions. Today we have with us Dr. Ivis Turner. We are talking about medicines and pharmacology. Dr. Turner, I wanted to also ask you to mention a little bit more, because one of the things that happens with us in respect of medication is that the cost of it can be or seem prohibitive. But you did mention that there are generic versions of drugs that we can take. But there are people who believe that, listen, generic means it ain't gonna be as good, because our practice with or experience with brands that might not be, for instance, Kellogg versus some generic brand is that, oh, that don't taste as good. And so generic kind of gives a bad word to the whole medicine and quality of a product.
Right. So we hear this quite often, and we actually get this question, you know, on a daily basis from our patients, if the generic is going to do the same thing. That's how it usually comes. Is it going to do the same thing? Is it going to work? So for all generic medications that have been approved, they have to go through a series of experimental studies and so forth to make sure that they are what's considered AB rated. So when you're looking at AB rated medications, you're looking at the equivalent generics being just that, equivalent in efficacy and having the same expected outcomes as the original brand that was produced. So there should not be any difference when it comes to the effectiveness of medication from any approved pharmaceutical company.
Gentlemen, to Z Live, I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us. So sorry that we got a little bit of a technical glitch just now. Sorry about that, Dr. Turner. But I heard you explaining the generic drug issue and how we need not be concerned, largely because if we think about it, a lot of times the generic drug producers are able to do their things more cost effectively because that drug was done by the people who own the brand, who have the brand in the first place, hey? And that these people are then able to come behind with greater ease and produce that same drug.
Precisely.
Now, also, one of the things that I wanted to ask you is, you know, this issue of people trading drugs. You know, like I get a prescription, someone tells me they have an issue, and I say, boy, I had that same issue, and you could take some of my medication. How dangerous is that?
It can be very dangerous, especially if you haven't gotten a diagnosis for whatever symptoms. Or so, for instance, someone may tell you that they, you know, they're feeling symptoms of a urinary tract infection. And then you have a friend who had a urinary tract infection last week, and they say, oh, I still have some medication left over. So that leaves two persons endangering themselves. So you have the person who would not have completed their antimicrobial or regimen for that urinary tract infection, and they're going to give away some of their medication, which leaves them short of completion. And then you have the person who's going to take the medication for the infection, and they're not sure what the causative microbe is. So the person who would have went to their friend who was already diagnosed with the urinary tract infection would be taking a medication that can potentially cause their condition to have zero improvement or to even get worse, because now you're opening the environment for increased flora and increased risk of even more potentiated infection. Then you have the person who would have given the medication who has not completed their course, which means they would have given the bacteria or whatever would have been causing the infection. They would have given that, you know, a little bit of treatment and started to improve, but then, hey, you leave it open for this bacteria or whatever is causing the infection to thrive. So a lot of bacteria that we're exposed to, they have the potential to fight or to mutate and become even worse. Or even if you would have taken an antibiotic or the bacteria that you have, there's potential for another microbe developing in that area. So it's important to make sure that you're in compliance with whatever is recommended for you. And it's important that you see a physician for an accurate diagnosis on whatever symptoms you're experiencing. Sharing medication, I do not recommend, even with long-term therapy, for instance, with diabetes management. There are different levels of treatment for diabetes, so it's impractical to try and share medications. So you'd experience issues with, for instance, persons who have, let's bring it down to the simplest form. So let's say, for instance, you have a person who has type 1 diabetes versus a person who has type 2. One would require insulin therapy, while the other may only require oral diabetes management therapy. The first person with type 1 diabetes shouldn't say, okay, my sugar is high, let me just take a tablet to bring it down. You know, so you have to have a complete understanding of what medication you should be on, because these medications target a certain area of the body and they have a certain effect on the organs of the body. So this is where the whole pharmacology aspect comes in. And then you have the potential issue with, if you're sharing medication, if you were already diagnosed with something and two persons have the same medication. So oftentimes we'd see a husband and wife on the same medications, right? And the wife falls short or maybe loses a few tablets and takes some of the husband's. So now when it's time for the husband to renew his medication, it may be too early. So then it throws off the therapy and it gives the healthcare provider the impression that one is not taking the medication while the other is overusing the medication. So there's a lot of things that can tie into this. So when it comes to sharing, I don't encourage it. I know that sometimes when your back is against the wall, it happens. But like with anything else, you want to really seek the advice from your healthcare practitioner.
Doc, you know, we have so many other questions to ask you, but you're only supposed to be with us for the first hour. I know we're going to be speaking with a nutritionist in the second hour. I don't know maybe we can get you to come back on another time, if that's okay.
Sure.
But we really have some other questions we'd like to ask you, and you needed more time.
Okay, no problem. Thank you for having me, Mr. Lang.
Thank you so much.
Happy International Women's Day.
Yes, happy International Women's Day, women. Respect you, as we like to say. Thank you so very much. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break for news. And when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Yvette Andrews Strawn, a nutritionist, and we're going to get some great information from her. All courtesy of Doctors Hospital, our title sponsor. We'll be back after this break.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, where we have been partnering with a doctor's hospital to provide you with healthcare from just great healthcare professionals. And I am so delighted to have with me now Mrs. Andrew Strawn, who is a nutritionist and is here to help us with some of these dietary requirements to keep us from getting ill and keep us fit, and also to help us get better when we need to. Welcome, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here with you, Mr. Lang, and the wider Bahamian community to share information on nutrition.
No, we're delighted to have you here, and thank you for taking the time out to be here. Can I ask you, first of all, give us a kind of framework approach to looking at our dietary needs. Just how do we approach this area of, listen, this is how healthy eating should go?
Okay. Well, I guess first I wanted to start with just the fact that we understand that nutrition is an emerging science. We have a lot of information out there, from Google University to even a lot of persons that are giving information to clients. We go in the food store, we go to some of the fast food stores, fast food places, and the information is vast. But nutrition, as we know, is an emerging science. And when we're looking at information and how we should really structure our diet, for me as a licensed nutritionist and also my colleagues, the best thing to do, Mr. Lang, is to work on evidence-based medicine, nutrition practice. So all the information and recommendations that we're following should really come from high quality research and data. I know that as of lately, a lot of persons have the intermittent fasting diets. What else is out there? They have the keto diet. Go ahead. You go ahead. You can.
Yeah. There's the keto. There's the there's even an orange diet I know that's out there. You guys, there's a whole lot.
Right. So for us, the first place to answer your question, you would look at evidence-based practice, nutrition science, and recommendations for your dietary needs. Of course, you have a nutritionist. You can visit a nutritionist, a licensed nutritionist or dietitian, to sit down and have a complete assessment of your diet. And we then provide you with a nutrition individualized nutrition care plan. But when we're looking at the evidence base, there are certain societies. I'm sure you've heard of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. We have the Dietitians of Canada that are providing evidence-based practice guidelines for whether the patient is in hospital, evidence-based practice guidelines for diabetes, for losing weight, for if you have cancer. And so this is the really starting point for persons with those questions. We also have the British Dietetic Association. Sometimes we use their guidelines, and also the European Society of Clinical Nutrition and Metabolism. So that's pretty much the starting point. We don't have any local guidelines. We hope to get a few local guidelines eventually for our nutritional recommendations. However, we do follow the current American and European guidelines of your recommended dietary needs, intake, daily intake.
So, and I'm glad you mentioned evidence-based, because it could be a confusing world out there, especially for all of these masters and PhDs from Google University. What is your guidance about that? Because, I mean, the average person may not have these guidelines available to them, but how do we then approach this subject of eating properly or getting proper nutrition?
Well, it may sound cliche, but other than myself, there are other professionals. At Doctors Hospital, we can provide a nutrition assessment and give you an individualized approach to your meal planning and a nutrition care plan. So first we would start with obtaining, collecting relevant information. For example, let's talk about your needs. What are some of your challenges? And I'm not using you as a client, but just using it as an example.
Well, actually I did do that exercise with a nutritionist at Doctors Hospital during my physical, and yes, they asked me things about, you know, what I ate most and what I, you know, like, you know, are you a meat eater? Are you this eater? Do you eat a lot of that? Do you eat a lot of this? And all of that provided then the basis for the discussion we had further.
Okay, great. So then we go into that to determine where you're having maybe some deficiency is, or maybe even where you're not having proper meal planning. So pretty much what constitutes a proper nutrition or proper meal plate, a variety of foods, eating regular meals, including whole grains, from fiber, fruits and vegetables a day, and limiting really a lot of fats, sugar and salt in our diet is recommended for good nutrition. And then that poses the question, is the Bahamian plate, is the problem, the true problem, really salt? Is it really fat, or is it really sugar?
Yeah, that's a question. You please help us.
Well, I'm still grappling with that, but let's look first at the sugar. let's look at the component of, have you heard the word carbohydrates?
Yes.
Okay, so we now have carbohydrate foods. And the confusion is that if you look at a regular Bahamian plate, dinner, Sunday dinner, so you would have a piece of macaroni, you would have potato salad, you would have plantain, peas and rice, and maybe coleslaw on the side. And on the top of it, you may have fried fish and some steamed ribs. I realize that most Bahamians have at least two or three meats on a Sunday.
You got that right. We mention that on the show very often.
Yes, two or three meats. So now, if we count the amount of carbs, we already have the potato salad, which is from a starchy vegetables. So that is definitely a carbohydrate. That's one serving there already. Now we on the rice. The typical Bahamian would do maybe half the plate of rice, peas and rice. And that can be, again, another two or three servings. The macaroni is from pasta itself. And that's also an additional like four or five serving of the carbohydrate choice. And the plantain, we consider a starchy vegetable as well. So typically then our plate is really unbalanced. We have a lot of carbohydrate choices and we should really, our plate should really look like a quarter of your plate should really be your carbohydrate choices, whether that is corn, your whole grains, some pumpkin or beans or the peas and rice. They would be considered your carbohydrate choices there. So we are overeating on our carbohydrates. Now, the seasoning, so the salt, a lot of people do the complete seasoning. And so we do have a challenge with salt intake. And I think we're moving more towards more grilling and baking of our meats now. So to answer that, my question earlier, I think the key components, and we're seeing this now with some of our patients, is that we're having an overconsumption of carbohydrates, which are leading to insulin resistance and obesity. And with the overweight, more persons who are now getting diagnosed with prediabetes as well as type 2 diabetes. And in addition to that, the salt, we're seeing a lot more persons with hypertension, high blood pressure. So I think it's really the sugar and the salt, sodium. We've gotten a lot better with how we prepare our meats. We've doing a lot of baking, air frying nowadays. Everybody has an air fryer in their house.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you 100%. I don't know why and when I started this, but I broiled I kind of steamed in a pot my meats more often than frying for a very long time. It wasn't so much a health decision. It was just a preference. but I found out that it was better to do it that way.
Well, congratulations. Good for you.
And I have a text here says, you're really making me feel guilty from eating this chicken in the bag. now you know.
Now, which vendor was that from?
It's a female. Now, in talking to nutritionists, including the one I spoke to at Doctor's Hospital, I didn't get the impression that they were saying, basically, cut this out, cut that out. But I did get the impression that, you know, you want to have more, you want to have healthier choices, you want to have more balance, you want to have more moderation. And there are some things that you should really only do as a treat. I didn't hear anybody really say, you know, just cut all this stuff, because we live in a culture, we live in a lifestyle, we're used to a certain way of eating. And I tell people, Bahamians eat flavor, we don't eat food.
Correct, you are totally right. Food and eating, it's a source of pleasure.
Right.
It's a source of pleasure. And you don't want to feel as though you're being penalized just with your diet or that you're losing out on something. So when we visit with clients, we look we look at the overall picture of, okay, what are we faced with? If you have some problems with metabolizing sugar, if you have some problems with metabolizing fat or risk of heart disease, but at the same time, we're going to say probably lower the portions of those types of food or that is causing the challenges. However, still maintain the source of pleasure. It's a community feel on a Sunday when you go to your mother-in-law's house or your grandma or uncle's house for that mealtime, pre-COVID, of course. This is a tradition. This is a part of our culture. Food and eating is something that we should still engage in the pleasure of it.
Yeah, I find that if you're not enjoying it, it's really hard to stick to a particular lifestyle of eating. I'm sorry, I abandoned this dieting thing a long time ago. So I try to incorporate things into my lifestyle that I can sustain.
Oh wow, you said stick to at first, but you've now used the key word. Is it sustainable?
Right.
Is it sustainable for you to skip intermittent fasting for the rest of your life, not eating meals for up until midday or not eating one meal per day? Is it sustainable to not have any carbs? So yeah, we are recommending a lower carb intake by two behemoths because we just did the exercise and realized that we can make some adjustments. We can adjust our carbs down by half.
Right. And this is something I wanted to ask you about because, you know, the obviously balance requires measurement and it's difficult for us to measure, okay, how much rice is too much rice?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How much meat is too much meat? You know?
Okay.
Maybe I don't have 3-4 meats, but let's say the chicken, how much is too much chicken?
Well, I'll give you an easy tool. The easiest tool that I would have used with clients, especially who don't want to go and measure or have a food scale. So everyone has a fist, right?
Yes.
So you ball your fist and the size of your fist mm-hmm. is usually a serving of a cup. So half a fist is about half a cup. Now some men have some big fists out there.
Yeah.
So that would be pretty much your serving of your starch on your plate. And the starch, just to review, remember we said some of the starches include your rice, your grits, and you have starchy vegetables mm-hmm. Like your potatoes, and you have pumpkin and the winter squash. Mm-hmm. You also have cassava is a mm-hmm. starchy vegetable too. Mm-hmm. So we're going to also use that fist to say, if you have a boil up, now that's the amount of really starches you should be having.
Okay.
Or the rice that you should be having, or the grits that you should be having along with your sardines with tomatoes and onions, which is a pretty healthy breakfast for a Bahamian.
Right.
So then you take your hand again and you open up your hand.
Okay.
And now we have the palm of our hands.
Mm-hmm.
So not two palms, but just one palm mm-hmm. would be about 3 to 4 ounces of your meat size. So if you have a piece of salmon
mm-hmm.
and you saute the salmon or you pan fry it or grill it, mm-hmm. the palm of your hand would kind of give you an estimation about 3 to 4 ounces of mm-hmm. the amount of protein that you should be having per meal.
And that's the palm of the hand, not the fingers extended. Because you know me can cheat.
Not the fingers and not the toes.
Okay, that's the palm of the hand. The palm of the
Did
hand.
You say the palm or the toe? The palm of the the palm of the hand. Right. And then we've already spoken about the aspect of how you prepare your meats, and you want to boil or either grill or bake them to make them a little more healthier.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have your thumb, which would then be like a serving of your fat. So if you're using olive oil or a teaspoon or pretty much some thumbs are a teaspoon size, some thumbs are a tablespoon size, but you, on average, a teaspoon would be the size of your thumb. And that is to really control some of your, the fats. And the fats, we're looking at the butter, the oils, some of the salad dressings, and typically maybe limiting to 2 or 3 thumb serving sizes would keep you in the safe zone.
Okay. And your vegetables, you could be as liberal as possible.
Right. So what we have, Mr. Lang, is a simpler method other than the portion now. So we now take, plan the portion of your plate. So if you draw a circle and you cut that circle in half, and the one of the half, you then cut in another half. So now you have 2 quarters and then half the plate.
Right.
So half of that plate will be your non-starchy vegetables, which is asparagus, your broccoli, your cabbage, not the coleslaw with the mayonnaise, but just like some steamed cabbage. But again, it is a part of the cultural aspect of it. And we do allow every now and again in variety, you can have the coleslaw. Your cucumbers, these are some okra, some more native fruits would be like your okra, sorry, vegetables would be your okra, some bell peppers, as well as any type of salad greens can go on that full half of the plate.
Okay.
Now the other quarter, if you're measuring your palm of your hand for the meat, one of those would be, or your protein would go in the quarter on the other half of the plate.
Right.
And here's the control measurement measure right now is what you're left with is 1/4 is where you're going to put your peas and rice.
All right. Okay. Peas and rice, crab and rice, peas and grits, crab and grits, white rice, whatever it is.
Right. It really controls the portions and also would kind of promote portion control for weight loss as well. Simplest method. And if you don't even have to draw the circle, there are some fold over trays, the disposable biodegradable one that are already compartmentalized. So we just have to switch. So the portion where we put the rice already, the bigger portion, and the portion where we put the coleslaw, we're gonna switch.
We just switch them around, we'd be all right.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you though, beans, right? So if some people are saying, are trying to be either vegetarian, vegan, or reduce altogether, but reduce the amount of meat they're having. So they're looking for that protein. And we're told that these beans may be a source of protein. Talk to us about that, please.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. What we call legumes, another fancy word for beans, the legumes include like your lentils, your chickpeas. Let's talk about maybe the black-eyed peas. And what are some beans we have here? Some persons use
red beans. We have the red
kidney beans. Okay.
What about the pigeon peas and pigeon peas? And them are also in that family, right?
Right. Yes.
What about lima beans?
Yes, definitely. So now we call them. They have a double. The beans actually serve a double purpose. Not only do they, sort of like a triple purpose, actually, not only do they provide you with some plant protein, plant source of protein necessary for amino acids and building repair of bodily tissue and what your body needs, but it also provides what we call soluble fiber. You know, the fiber is important in the beans as well, especially if you don't take off the skin and you eat everything. The other component, though, that with the beans is now that bean is still going to go in that quarter portion of the plate because it's still a starchy vegetable.
I see. I was thinking, that's what I was wondering about. Yes.
Right. So let's say I have a person with diabetes now I'm working with, and we have half of the plate non-starchy vegetables. I still have to manage their blood sugar response, and the beans can cause a little, is this good? Low glycemic, lower sugar response, but I still have to count that as one of their carbohydrates, the beans, just as I would count the rice or the potato or a slice of bread. But it's giving them added protein, and it's giving them also added fiber. So that would be an excellent choice for any person, whether they're diabetic or just like yourself, wanting to eat healthier non-meat options.
Now, when we come back, I want to turn to something that really presents a challenge for many households. I mean, let's be real, like lots of households, the folks aren't so educated, aren't so financially well off. And they're making very practical choices about what they can afford to eat on a regular basis. And a lot of times that's really basically some of the stuff that we might regard as the most unhealthy things. Mm-hmm. But so when we come back, I want you to talk about how people in those circumstances can best make out in terms of trying to get as nutritious, a balanced diet as is possible. So okay. When we come back, we'll take that up. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. We're here with Mrs. Yvette Andrew Strawn, our nutritionist for the day, courtesy Doctor's Hospital, our title sponsor today, as we go through this health week. We'll be back after this break.
We believe in relationship banking. We take pride in getting to know our clients. You have access to knowledgeable, approachable ambassadors and financial coaches so that we can recommend the best product for you. At Fidelity, we care about you. From your financial health to your physical health, we can relate to you because we're just like you. Come and start your relationship banking experience with us today. Visit us online at fidelitygroup.com. Visit any of our branches in Nassau or Grand Bahama, or phone 356-7764 in Nassau, or 352-6676 for Freeport.
When you testify in court, you're expected to tell the truth. Same goes for your insurance application form. If you don't answer every question truthfully, you could be found guilty of misrepresentation. Leaving out just one piece of information on your insurance application can lead to misrepresentation. That means your insurance company could deny your policy or refuse to pay your claim. This message was brought to you by the Insurance Commission of the Bahamas, protecting the interests of policyholders.
Sheila, you okay? I see smoke coming from your window.
Chad, Johnny Mo's burning down the house frying chicken.
Your kitchen is a mess. You have insurance?
If I have insurance, I pulled my phone out, pulled up the Royal Star Assurance app, and in no time, I was on live chat with RSA rep, sent pics of the damage, filed my claim on the spot.
Wow, I don't think my insurance got that kind of app.
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon, where we are here with Mrs. Yvette Andrew Strawn talking nutrition. She's a nutritionist, courtesy of Doctors Hospital, our title sponsor today. If you want to give us a call, please feel free to do so on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us also on 422-4796 or WhatsApp me on 439-3043. I tell you one thing, I almost feel like, you know, when you kind of sitting down, snuggled, getting the kind of information that makes you feel like my life is going to be better off. That's how I feel today. But I have to tell you, me and doctors got to talk because we're going to need more time with y'all. And so hopefully over the course of some weeks to come, y'all be available and get some more information because I know we're going to run out of time today, Mrs. Strawn.
Oh, that's very nice of you to say. Snuggly information. I'm going to coin that. Nutrition information.
I'm telling you, it's happening for me. Listen, I believe in feed yourself. No, this is how I say it. Feed your cells and then feed yourself. So you feed your cells nutrition and you feed yourself flavor.
Okay.
That's how I approach it. So when I go to eat, I'm asking myself, okay, Shivago, are you feeding your cells first? And then, okay, how can I make this flavorful so I can feed myself? Because that's what I remember is the taste of the food. My cells remember the nutrients in the food.
Your cells. Okay, yes.
Cells, yes, my cells. Because ultimately, isn't that where the food is going? Isn't that...
The nutrients.
That's right, right?
Right. And that's you raise a very good point because though we're overfed and we're really undernourished. So to shift and now rethink about, okay, I'm gonna get the best nutrients from the food with good flavor, of course, will then cause you to think and use more strategic meal planning measures as you do at meal times for like a colorful plate so that your cells are definitely getting the best nutrients and antioxidants that it needs. I like that.
So these folks who are challenged financially and otherwise to kind of step up and do all the kind of more sophisticated things we have to do to have a balanced diet, what do you say to them? What do you say should be their approach to trying to get the best outcomes from their meals?
Shopping smart and saving, right? Well, first, let me start by saying it is a challenge. It has been a challenge over the past several years now with the current health landscape. But we're looking at, I went to the food store several weeks ago where a bottle of mayonnaise was like maybe $4, mm-hmm. and it's now like $7. Right. So we have to definitely plan ahead. So the first tip is to plan ahead before you do make that trip to the food store. Mm-hmm. Do an inventory of your pantry and to see exactly what you have and what you haven't really been using. Don't buy the salami if you haven't been using it, or the beans, and it's been there in the cupboard for a while. So really do a quick look at your pantry and then make a shopping list. Make a shopping list based on maybe the meals that you want to plan each week. There are several food vendors or food suppliers that offer discounts as well as weekly coupons that you can come and try to save on either your meats, and you have to pay attention to that. Digitally now, I think a lot of those food suppliers have been sending out to the community where the savings are. And, you know, I'm not embarrassed to say that some supermarkets give you food stamps and we save them and we stick them on the paper at the end of the year and we're able to get some nourishments by that way as well in order to save.
Yes, of course, yes.
Order to save. Mm-hmm. So then plan ahead is the first thing in order to shop smart and save. And do look out for some coupons as well as any type of rebate or coupon stamp program that they're giving. Don't throw it away, but you can definitely benefit from that. One of the other key aspects I'm realizing too is that we have local suppliers. You know, we have farmers market sometimes on Gladstone Road or Cowpen Road. There's a lot of fish vendors. I think there's one in Golden Gates. There's a fish market, the Montague, and we can go out and also support them locally and get some pretty good a bag of maybe snappers for like $20. And that really, rather than going and getting a pack of lamb chops in the food store, which is almost the same, $20, and you're really only getting like 3 or 4 pieces.
But you know, we like I'm thinking, right? If you gotta have a half a plate full of vegetables, and you got like 4 or 5 people to feed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you gonna afford them vegetables in the Bahamas, man? I mean, I'm serious.
So you have to buy. You gotta look at buying in bulk. Buy at the wholesale level if you can, and and the doors are open, so you can go and get. I know some persons bundle the like your cabbage and lettuce in the threes. Mm-hmm. More of the tomatoes. So there are some food suppliers that do that. You just have to look out. You know, I'm not representing any of the food suppliers, but just saying that you have to look at where the opportunities where you can buy in bulk. Instead of buying the 2 loose potatoes, maybe you're gonna get the case of or 2 bags of the potatoes or a case of onions. Or you can get 3 bags of spinach. It really ends up being saving you. Even when we're looking at yogurt, I go to the food store and I may have about 3 yogurt, the little yogurt snacks,
mm-hmm.
or 4. And the cashier said, "Do you have 4 or 6? I said, "No, I only have 4. But then I said, "Why did you ask me?" She said, "Because there's a package price if you get 6. And sometimes I didn't even know that. So it's like, oh, I save more if I go and get more of the loose yogurt.
Right, right.
She said, "Yeah, we have case prices based on the amount of units you're buying." So
is
probably at the cash register. Try not to just check out. So check out and look to see what's actually going on at a checkout register, so that you can get the discount and savings.
Is there any advantage to nutrition-wise to frozen versus fresh? Like, because sometimes, you know, if you buy a lot of fresh stuff, like right out the produce section, that's you're going to have to put that in the fridge and you run the risk of spoilage.
But right.
Frozen stuff, you know, you can throw that in the freezer. Is there any advantage nutritionally or disadvantage?
Well, the advantage, of course, the rule of thumb, fresh is best.
Mm-hmm.
So first we go fresh, and then if you can't get fresh, frozen. The last choice is canned, because with the canned vegetables, as you know, they're using a lot of preservatives. They're using some sodium. So fresh is best. And you can go in the frozen section. They have some frozen vegetables as well as you have your corn, your starchy vegetables, the corn. They have some green beans as well. They have some mixed vegetables and also some frozen like berries and strawberries that you can add into a smoothie. So that will save you too in terms of spoilage.
Right.
Because you don't want to throw away something you just paid about $5.99 for a carton of fresh blueberries.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, what you can do is when you do get the fresh, you can half it. You can put half of the non-frozen, you can put it in the fridge and then freeze the other half for procuring it for later use.
You know, if I see that my vegetables may be run the risk of spoilage because of age, I steam it down.
Oh, there you
go. I steam it down and I put it in the freezer.
There you go.
I'm going to use that later on, right?
yes. Good choice. And then too, there are some vegetables that, because you haven't been using them for a while, and they start to grow like little root hairs. And everybody has been a gardener in COVID, the COVID landscape. So I throw them outside and I start growing celery or red potatoes, and you'd be surprised. Some of those vegetables then can now provide a harvest for you as well.
Now, my tomato trees are now producing tomatoes. I have arugula, yeah. I have that. I got some pepper tree out there. I got some watermelon growing out there. So I know exactly what you mean.
So we call you Farmer Lang.
I have a text that says, "I substitute the potato with cauliflower when making what we call potato salad. Boil the cauliflower, cauliflower just as we would boil the potatoes. Cuts back on the carbohydrates."
Oh, there you go, Farmer Lang. Very good.
That's what this person is saying. That's a text from somebody. A text from someone.
Oh, okay. Yes.
We have a text. We have another text asking, what about wine? Also, some people eat the right types of foods, but they don't feel full with the portion size. So they double or triple or up on veggies and meat.
If the person is the person diabetic, or they're doubling up on the vegetables, and then also you know the fiber rich foods are a lot filling as well. So, and the beans, like we mentioned, are some fillers. So, and soups in general as a start can be a filler. So those are some tips as well. You also mentioned question about wine. What's the
The person just asked, what about wine? I guess in terms of health, nutrition, is it useful? I guess that's the question, because that's all they said is, what about wine?
Well, alcohol consumption, we won't take it to the extreme as being such a social factor in terms of when we started looking at food and eating as a cultural aspect. But we, you know, we do recognize as nutritionists, as behemoths, we have persons who engage in alcohol consumption. But the recommendation against, again, evidence-based, is that you have no more than 2 standard drinks a day and aim for at least maybe 2 or 3 alcohol-free days a week. You know, some persons are drinking a beer every day, 7 days a week. So my recommendation would be, yes, definitely the wine, as we know, red wine, have some antioxidant effects that can be beneficial, but we also have to look at our limits. And those limits is to not have no more than 2 standard drinks per day, but also try to engage in having alcohol-free days a week. If you know that you've been consuming 2 or 3 drinks every day of the week.
Now, I don't want y'all to judge me, because I know how our audience can be. You know, y'all don't judge me, but I was sitting down talking to my nutritionist, and I told her, listen, I ain't going to lie to you. Chivago Lang to have me one soda with my food, right? One can of soda. So she didn't judge me. She said, okay, here's what I don't want you to do. I would prefer you not to have the soda, but here's what I don't want you to do. If you're going to have it, don't have it with your meal. She says, because with your carbohydrates, based on what I told her I would typically eat, you're going to have a spike in sugar through the from the carbohydrate. If you add a soda to that, you're going to add another spike, and that's going to be a problem over time for your liver and your insulin production and so forth and so forth. So we don't want you to do that. So if you're going to have that soda, which I don't recommend, have it outside the meal.
Right. So she is totally correct. Don't try not to drink your calories. Right. Or drink your sugars. Right. Let's look at a typical, I'm trying not to, I guess I have a name, a malt beverage, a famous malt beverage that we have in the Bahamas.
Guilty.
A nice cold malt beverage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. After
you. The Kong salad.
Now, Mr. Farmer Lang.
Yes, ma'am.
How much carbohydrates do you think in that one malt beverage?
Man, too much.
53 grams. Oh, it is recommended. And again, I was reiterating the point that, yeah, I think we can adjust down our carbohydrate intake per meal. The recommended intake for most balanced carbohydrate is 45 to about 60 grams of carbohydrates from either fruit, your grains, your starchy vegetables, or your breads, right? Per meal. So if you're having that 52 grams already from the Vitamalt, along with your rice, along with your potato, along with your plantain, you definitely have exceeded the allowance for the total amount of carbohydrates per that meal. So for my diabetics, as well as any regular person, non-diabetic, you really can drink your sugars and cause some blood sugar problems and glycemic control problems.
She also gave me another tip though. Don't drink it with the meal. When you drink it, load the cup up with ice so that reduces the amount you're gonna necessarily drink, or water down something. You know, these were some tips, because I guess it was a way to be practical and say, listen, I'm not gonna suggest you're not gonna do it, but here's a way to do it in a way that's less harmful.
Right. So you try to be practical.
Yeah.
Practical. Yeah. So again, other than the evidence-based practice guidelines, we try to be individualistic mm-hmm. with what we're dealing with our clients or the patients. Mm-hmm. So I don't really have much evidence on the ice, but I do have evidence on watering down. Let's say if you're drinking some cranberry juice, mm-hmm. So I would do 4 ounces of cranberry juice and maybe water it down with 8 ounces of water.
Right.
So that then you still have the volume, but then you're getting less carbohydrate or sugar in now, that drink.
We're going to take our final break. But when I come back, I got to ask you to please give us some guidance on dairy products, please, because, you know, that's a big part of many of our diets, too. We need to know what the deal is with that, the cheese, the milk, the egg, the whatever, butter, et cetera, et cetera. So when we come back, well, butter maybe. Yeah, butter is dairy fat. Anyway, when we come back, please give us some guidance on that. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabbat Lang, your host. We're here with Mrs. Yvette Andrews Strawn, and she's our nutritionist today, courtesy Doctors Hospital, our partner in this health week. When we come back, we'll continue and finish up our conversation with Mrs. Strawn. We'll be back after this break.
If you're looking to diversify your portfolio, chart a course for RF Mutual Funds, where you can get global returns through our suite of internationally invested funds. Get exposure in U.S., Asian, European, and emerging markets without central bank approval. And with financial services leader Morgan Stanley as the advisor of our international funds, you can benefit from RF's global connections. Set sail for international markets today by visiting rfgroup.com. RF, money at work.
Doctors Hospital's Pharmacy introduces a new spin on prescriptions called Pick Up Now, Pay Later. That's right. You can collect your medications first and pay after. How does it work? Step 1, submit a prescription online. Step 2, select a pickup site. Step 3, collect your medication. And step 4, pay online within 14 days. For more info, call us at 242-302-4785 or visit us at doctorshosp.com.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, everybody.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. We're so glad you could join us for these remaining moments of the show where we're speaking with Mrs. Yvette Andrews Strawn, and she's a nutritionist, giving us some great information on how we can pay better attention to our nutritional needs. Don't forget that this whole week we're looking at issues related to health, and we'll continue with that tomorrow. And so please stay tuned. Ma'am, I'm not a fan of milk. I've never been a fan of milk, but, you know, I love carnation cream, or I love cream. I mean, carnation has been a choice, but I love cream. And, you know, lots of people in this country like cheeses and that kind of stuff. What do we need to be aware of when it comes to dairy products?
Okay, well, pretty much, let's look at the recommendation, and the evidence-based recommendation is that dairy consumption for most adults, we want to definitely have about 2 to 3 servings of our dairy products. And for children or pregnant and lactating women and the elderly, that may be a little, we've definitely elevated to about 3 or 4 servings, just because their needs are for calcium and phosphorus and vitamin D is in a little more than the regular adult. So the tip, the main tip is now to look at. Remember the dairy, we're dealing with fat, okay? So we have either 1%, 2% skim milk or skim milk, 1% fat, 2% fat or full milk fat, milk. So we look at the colors. Most of them are the red. So we're going for the red. That's a full fat milk. And the saturated fat can cause a little challenges with persons with cardiovascular disease. So the recommendation is really after a child turns one, they can definitely move down. We can cut down to 2%. An adult, we can look at 2% or skim milk to lower the amount of fat content that they're getting from the milk or dairy product. Cheeses, not the cheese and the macaroni and cheese, we also have to watch the portion there because it's also saturated in fat. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at 1 or 2 ounce serving, and that is pretty much maybe two thumb size of the cheeses. Mm-hmm. So the overall tip is, yes, you can. You need the calcium, we need the phosphorus as we age, as well as pregnant and lactating and young children. But the tip is to definitely reduce from fat, full fat milk or dairy products to lower fat products. So low fat cheeses could be an option as well. And there are other products other than milk, like the broccoli, you can get some of your color, your greens, to get some of the dairy from. And then as of lately, they have a lot of almond milk, if you don't like cow's milk, that is fortified with some of these nutrients as well that would still meet your needs.
What about, you know, we in this country love to snack.
Mm-hmm.
We're buying the kids the chips, maybe even the cereals, because they can have them in between meals. What's your guidance on snacks and what have you with respect to children in particular, but also ourselves?
Yeah, snacking is very important. The best snack idea, of course, is if you can snack on fresh fruits and vegetables, but every now and again in moderation. So if you're packing your child's lunch or if they're home on virtual school, a half a tuna sandwich with a whole wheat bread or a wheat bread with some baby carrots and a teaspoon of ranch dressing could be a healthy snack. You have, for kids, you can do the grapes and dip them in like yogurt and then freeze them for the kids. And they have like little fruit popsicles as their yogurt fruit pop, frozen fruit popsicle, also given their fruit serving. But typically some healthier snacks, an ounce of nuts giving us some protein, and 2 or 3 servings of fresh popcorn. We can pop our own popcorn as well without the added salt. I don't know if any have you done your own fresh popped popcorn at home, but it's quite easy, the old-fashioned way.
Yes, yeah. And popcorn also, I've been on a energy enhancement program and energy and clarity. And one of the energy producing foods is popcorn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay, well, that's good. We have a text here says your guest, Mrs. Strawn, sounds so similar to two other Mrs. Strawn that I know, smart, knowledgeable, witty, and cute. She sounds like a banker and a nutritionist. Very nice to listen to and understanding.
Okay.
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you.
This person is asking, what about ice cream?
In moderation.
Well, if we have to have ice cream in moderation, I'm not going to ask you about guava duff.
Well, so I guess as we end, I guess I can say this now, just an overall synopsis of any food. Again, culturally, we want to maintain the pleasure of eating, but any food can become unhealthy once we're consuming it routinely in large quantities, whether we're drinking large quantities of orange juice or alcohol. But the overall what matters really is your overall nutrient mix in our meals so that we don't have excess calories, don't have excess saturated fat, excess salt and sugar, but keep the variety and the spice of life and keep the whole concept of the pleasure of eating as a part of your healthy concept. And I, like I said, I will coin that to really feed yourself and your cells is very important.
Yes, ma'am. Listen, ma'am, you've been superb. All our guests, our doctors, listen, y'all have been fantastic. The only challenge I have is the one I created where we didn't have enough time for folk to flesh out all these things. But hey, thank God if he spares life, they can come back. And I want to thank you, Mrs. Strawn, for being an excellent, excellent nutritionist guest for us today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us. Tomorrow, we are going to be dealing with the issue of kidneys. You know, this is Kidney Awareness Month. And so you want to stay tuned tomorrow with looking at the kidneys. We're going to have with us a nephrologist who's going to help us deal with that issue. So stay tuned. God bless you. Y'all have a great, great evening. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow. You've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host.